Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series House of the Dragon. I'm David Chen, and joining me, as always, from this point forward, she is the author of The Unofficial Guide to Game of Thrones. He's also the entertainment reporter over at Insider, Kim Renfro. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so stoked to be here and continuing all things dragon talk.
It's going to be a lot of fun. So we decided we are going to record an episode today because you recently had a chance to talk with a bunch of people involved with the show. And we have some responses to stuff that's been going on online, some revelations, some thoughts about spoilers. And so there will be no spoilers in this episode of the podcast. But we will be talking about the idea of spoilers and how we're going to treat it or how we should think about it going forward. So that's what we're going to cover on today's episode of A Cast of Kings. I do want to say you can find more episodes of this podcast at acastofkings.com. You can find us on YouTube. Every episode will be uploaded to YouTube at acastofkings.com/YouTube. And I'll also be putting clips of the show at acastofkings.com/TikTok. So you can find us on TikTok as well. Let's get to the conversation we want to have today, Kim Renfro, which is about everyone's favorite topic, sexual violence in TV shows.
Yes.
So there is going to be a conversation about this topic on today's episode. So just so you know, content warning if you are trying to avoid that kind of discussion. But a few weeks ago on July 20th, The Hollywood Reporter tweeted out the following, quote, House of the Dragon pulls back on the amount of sex, but will depict sexual violence inherent in its Middle Ages-inspired world. Quote, we don't shy away from it. If anything, we're going to shine a light on that aspect. It shouldn't be downplayed or glorified, end quote. And I think that was a quote
Yeah, Miguel Sapochnik, who's one of the co-showrunners of House of the Dragon, and he is like the... He's more of like the directing arm of the team. So he directed the pilot episode and I believe a couple of others, whereas Ryan Condal, his co-showrunner, is more of like the writing mind of that team.
Yeah. So this quote set off a firestorm of criticism because I think if I'm to characterize why people reacted poorly, it's that... I think there is an increasing skepticism of using sexual violence in TV shows and films as a way of shortcutting building actual characters, right? Rather than this person has a complex backstory, it's like, oh, they had sexual violence inflicted upon them. And like now that's kind of like a little part of their character that, you know, we can easily use to illustrate something about them. And I think over time, people have had less patience with this as a way to build character, unless it is truly essential to what that character is.
Right. And even like outside, can I also just chime
please,
in
please.
Real fast? Even just outside of that aspect of like whether or not it's necessary, like quote unquote necessary for the story or like believed to be necessary for the story, I think the second prong was that this tweet made it sound like, okay, we're going to pull back on the amount of sex, but still shine a light on sexual assault. And it's like, why can't we just have like pleasant sex scenes in a show? Like, right, why can't we just watch two characters like in love with each other have sex? Why would you like dim that down, but still shine a light on sexual assault? And then the bigger thing, I think, maybe particularly for women who like really love the fantasy genre, is like it's fantasy, right? No matter how much George R. R. Martin was drawing upon like medieval ages history and practices, there's no need to like continue quote unquote realism of the fact that sexual violence happens in our world when you have the ability to build out an entire fantasy world where maybe that's not a common practice, like.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That was what caught a lot of flack from the quote as well, is that it's a Middle Ages inspired world. And I think I saw a lot of very clever quote tweets around this about basically saying there's so many other elements of the Middle Ages that you did not put into Game of Thrones. Like, you know, the death and the disease and like, you know, people's hygiene habits and women's hairstyles and how much they shaved and like, you know, like all this stuff that was
everyone has their teeth. Everyone has their teeth in this show.
Exactly. So there's so many things that like were not inspired. Like, why did you choose to bring over the sexual violence elements? It feels like being very selective in a way that's not necessarily productive. So the tweet was dunked upon heavily.
Love when you see a bad ratio.
Yes, it had 2,800 quote over 2,800 quote tweets and only around 300 likes. For all the reasons we've discussed, like people were not happy with this quote. Now, do want to be fair that like this was one quote ripped out of context in and put into tweet form, and there was like a broader conversation about it that might not have been fully captured by the tweet. Mm-hmm. And you can read the sort of piece yourself at Hollywood Reporter. Decide for yourself if you think it was adequately captured. But in the time since then, Kim Renfro, you have spoken with some of the people behind the show. Now, who have you spoken with, just so everyone knows?
So I got the chance to be at like a virtual roundtable with Miguel Sapochnik and Ryan Condal together, and then several other pairings of cast. So I spoke with Matt Smith, Millie Alcock, and Emily Carey, who play the young Rhaenyra and Alicent, as well as Emma Darcy and, I'm blanking on her name, Cook. Plays the older...
Olivia Cook.
Yes. Who plays the older version of Alicent. And this topic came up because when we were speaking with them, you know, we had already been seeing the reaction to that tweet in particular, which, you know, bleeds out into other social media platforms, of course. So we asked them about it. It was actually one of the reporters at the roundtable with me at Metacritic was the one who asked the question. And the way that she phrased it specifically, which I thought was smart, was like, focusing on that pulls back on sex piece where she was like, do you think that like romantic, consensual, sexy sex does not have a place in a story like this?
Is that what they're calling it these days? Sexy sex, by the way?
Sexy sex. That was, you know, that was me. That's just what I call it. you know, yeah. I was about to say something else and I just won't. But yeah, so they... It felt to me like both Miguel Sapochnik and Ryan Condal were kind of like relieved to have a chance to clarify what they had meant by this. So Condal started out by responding and he said, for whatever reason, I think something was incorrectly reported or misconstrued. Like that was like how he started off. So I was like, okay, fair enough. Like you said, strong, that tweet
strong
was
opening,
like...
Strong opening, by the way. Which
strong opening.
I say that when I say strong, I mean bold. I don't necessarily mean good, you know? But yes, okay.
So he went on to say, quote, we're very aware of the time that we live in. We're very aware of how different the world is. And he's talking about like our world, like Earth in 2022, how different the world is now versus 10 years ago when the original show premiered, end quote. And then he went in to kind of explain that it's a different story entirely, which has, I guess, informed the approach that they have to including sexual violence in the show. And he sort of said, one thing that stood out was interesting where he was like, he said, quote, we're not in wartime yet. There isn't that kind of sexual violence that follows war, end quote. So like, we saw this a lot in Game of Thrones, right? Where like women were being assaulted all over the place in Westeros and in Essos. Usually like it happened in the aftermath of battles. There's a whole plot point around Daenerys trying to like rescue women from the Dothraki that she saw being assaulted like next to the dead bodies of their husbands and sons. It was terrible. So he's kind of saying like the whole part of the point of House of the Dragon is that we're beginning at the height of Targaryen power. There hasn't been war in Westeros for several decades by the time that we're starting into this story. So like that narrative piece of it, I guess, is just straight up not present. So he kind of was explaining that. And then Miguel Sapochnik weighed in and spoke about, he was the one who just straight up said, there is no sexual violence in season one of this show. So like the whole premise for this conversation that sprung up around that tweet was like, okay, guys, you know, gird your loins. We're in for some more sexual violence from season one of a show set in a fantasy world. Can't wait. So I think that is
because the tweet says pulls back on the amount of sex, but will depict sexual violence inherent in its. And so the implication from that tweet is that there is sexual violence, right?
Right. And they both said they like looked at each other, kind of like took a moment to like, I'm guessing, think through all of the scripts for season one. And they were like, no, there is no There are no instances of sexual violence in the first season of the show. That obviously doesn't mean that future seasons, if we ever get them, wouldn't have it, because guess what? We are probably headed into wartime or conflict. That's like the whole premise of this piece of House Targaryen history. So I appreciated them being able to clarify that. It means that anybody who may have not wanted to watch the show because they are not comfortable with seeing surprise instances of sexual assault on TV won't have to worry about that. They did add the addendum that, like, and they talked about this in the THR report as well as with me and my roundtable, that there are traumatic childbirth scenes throughout mm-hmm. this season. So content warning for anyone who might be in an extra heightened mood right now to think about women and pregnancy and consent and choices mm-hmm. that they have around their own health when it comes to being required to birth a child for the king. That is probably going to be the most, I think that that's going to be the focal point of any conversation going forward, is that how necessary is it to show the traumas of childbirth on television? We will see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I would argue that that is a topic and subject that has probably been underseen on television, you know, like that depicting childbirth and how challenging it is something that we as a society haven't done a good job of showing people.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to sexual violence, where one could argue that there might have been too much, you know, like, or that it might be excessive or gratuitous. I don't feel like that's true of childbirth so far anyway. But
true. I'm kind of the way that I have really started to look at the ubiquitous practice of including sexual assault or sexual violence in TV and movies is like, to me, it's not enough. If your reason for including it in the show is simply that, like, guess what? This happens to people all the time. So we felt the need to, quote unquote, like, not shy away from it or whatever it is. In my mind, it's not enough to simply, like, recreate something very traumatic that people experience all the time, or that's a part of a societal system that is highly patriarchal, the way that Westeros is and the way that our world is currently now. It's not enough to just show it and be like, yeah, isn't that terrible? Like, that's where you lose me, if that's the end point. To me, if you're going to include that in a story, I want what I appreciate more and what I think is the more thoughtful approach is, like, don't just show us the wound, like, show us the salve. Like, show us the alternative. Show us maybe what specific justice should happen after that, or maybe what specific, like, societal solution there could be to that type of a problem, you know? And so, like,
mm-hmm. or what the healing process is,
you yes
know? Which sure. Which was rarely certainly the original Game of Thrones had a lot of revenge violence, you know, like there was a lot of that in the original Game of Thrones show, but I think it's rare to see characters healing or coming to terms with the violence has happened in their past. Mm-hmm. And that's something I could see more of, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, that's the latest
here's my
update.
Question. Yeah. Here's my question for you, Kim, is how do you feel like... I mean, I'm curious, like, what you thought about the controversy. It feels to me, based on these quotes and based on reading Hibbert's story, that this was a little bit of a situation where the quote was taken a little bit out of context and people were kind of just dunking on this one specific thing about the tweet, you know?
Like, yeah.
And what I mean by that is, I'm not saying the show doesn't need to be dunked upon. We haven't seen it yet. So maybe, or I haven't seen
right.
it yet. Kim's seen an episode. So maybe it will mishandle how it handles violence and sexual violence against its characters. Like, it's very possible. But to me, it feels like the tweet made it, it was phrased in such a way that was like maximizing the dunking potential, and that
sure.
maybe the creators behind the show aren't actually as careless about talking about this as the tweet might make you think. So I'm curious, like, what did you think about the tweet? And also, now that you've spoken with the people behind the show, do you feel kind of satisfied with their answer? Are you like, oh yeah, like, I trust that this will be like fairly thoughtful the way they approach this?
Yeah. I mean, you're totally right about the tweet itself. Being a little bit of ammo for the Twitter masses to pounce upon. That just happens. Honestly, it's part of the reason why I left Twitter. Like the ability to have like a nuanced, fully fleshed out conversation about a lot of things. It's not impossible, but it's harder to do in the environment that Twitter has created. I think kind of intentionally. So for me, when I saw that happening, I was like, okay, I fully agree with a lot of the points that folks are making in response, which is like, this is a fantasy world. Why is this necessary? Why are we still having this conversation again? But I do think that after speaking with them, I absolutely left my conversation with them and like that roundtable feeling like they are at least very aware of the conversation in a way that not all TV showrunners are. There are a lot of, I think that some showrunners are prone to kind of stay in a bubble and not want to like be really aware of backlash or things like that. They don't want that to affect their writing process. It's a choice that people make. But Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik are not only very aware of every controversy and backlash and maybe character failing that happened in Game of Thrones. But they're also very aware of, I think, like that we're in a post Me Too movement world and that like they know that they are two men who are in charge of this show. And I think at least having that self-awareness reassures me a bit. Mm-hmm. That's good to see from people. And I'm just kind of going to wait and see what happens in the show. I'm much more interested in talking about specific things that happened in a show as opposed to like conceptual possibilities of what might happen in a show, if that makes sense. So like I'm in a little bit of a wait and see territory, but I appreciated that they apparently did not write a single instance of sexual assault into season one. Great. Good start. They've also, Miguel, like I mentioned at the start of this pod, Miguel Sapochnik directed the pilot, but they've hired a number of women directors as well as women writers. And that is a difference from Game of Thrones. Like, yes, we still have two men at the helm of this project once again. But it seems to me like they put a lot more care into hiring the background creators. They also mentioned that they had an intimacy coordinator on set, which was, I don't believe, the case for the earlier seasons of Game of Thrones. That's a little bit of a newer norm that happens. And they, Ryan Condal told me specifically, like, all of the actors knew long in advance exactly what would be expected of them if there was any like nudity or anything like that in scenes, rehearsed it carefully. So I think that they are already taking a different approach than what we saw happen in the first season of Game of Thrones, where like right out the gate, there was a sexual assault that didn't happen in the books in the pilot episode. And we've since heard stories from the set about like Emilia Clarke, and like it was a more of like a goofy joking around atmosphere, which it doesn't sound like anyone was hurt, which is great. But they also didn't, I don't think, have the level of like care and attention to like just how serious it is to have something like sex or violence portrayed in a TV show.
Yeah. A few interesting quotes from the interview. He says, Condal says, quote, "We're very aware of how different the world is now versus 10 years ago when the original show premiered. I also think this is a much different story." And then later on, quote, "There is sex and violence as part of the story, but the particular way we've approached it this time is making sure that whenever you're going to have any subject matter like sex or violence on screen, there's a compelling story reason. It's a story that needs to be told, and it's not being done gratuitously or to titillate or anything like that," end quote. So my sense reading these quotes and hearing you talk about it is like, it does seem like they are aware of it and they're going to try to approach it sensitively, which, by the way, is not always a given. Sometimes you read quotes from the showrunners and it's like, they don't care. And it does seem very much like they do actually care. So that's nice to hear. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things the showrunners may or may not care about, and that we definitely care about here on A Cast of Kings, you know, my philosophy, beliefs, whatever, is that one of the reasons why this podcast was popular is that we were very strict on the no spoilers section. In fact, like, you and I actually had to have a conversation in one of our previous episodes where, like, I was like, yeah, tell us what you know about this season. And then you started going into it. And then I realized very rapidly that, like, wow, a lot of this stuff is technically spoilers probably. So then we actually had to go back and then like redo the intro to make it clear that there were going to be spoilers.
Yeah.
And if you were listening and I did my job correctly, it was completely seamless and it all felt part of the plan. but yeah, it is. Book readers will know the stuff that happened, like a lot of the stuff that happens this season of House of the Dragon. So the question is, how are we going to approach this season of House of the Dragon when it comes to spoilers? It seems like Ryan Condal, one of the showrunners, has an opinion on this, right, Kim?
Yeah. So I asked him what he thought the spoiler etiquette should be. That's how I like to talk about it. Like, there's a certain etiquette when it comes to adaptation, books, movies, TV shows, what name it. So I asked if it should be similar to Game of Thrones, because for folks who don't know, A Song of Ice and Fire book readers were like really fantastic and almost like communal about wanting to preserve all of the twists and turns and everything that happens in Game of Thrones for people who were only watching the show and weren't going to go read the books. Even like down to the smallest thing, like they wouldn't even type out the words Red Wedding in an internet forum or in a discussion thread. They would just say RW. So that way nobody even knew that, like, oh, there's a wedding thing that happens that's really like major and bloody and twisted. And I think God's that was really great.
God bless them. God bless everyone who did that.
I think that that was a really awesome display of like internet community and fandoms and stuff. And so Ryan Condal said that he thinks the same or similar etiquette would be nice for House of the Dragon. He pointed out, which you know we've talked about, you can listen to previous pods about sort of like what to expect from this show, but the fact that Fire and Blood is, like, we already, like, all this Targaryen history is out there. The way that Ryan Condal said it, he was like, it's a Wikipedia click away if you really want to know what's going to happen in this show. It's very easy. Those are closed character arcs, as opposed to A Song of Ice and Fire was and still is an open-ended story from George R. R. Martin's vantage point. We don't know how he plans to end that story. So yeah, he said that, let's see, Ryan, the quote from him was, my feeling is that the really interesting thing about this series, because of the nature of the book, that it's written as a history with opposing viewpoints and unreliable narrators, the interesting thing is not what happens, but how and why it might happen. And so that's something that both people who have read Fire and Blood and the show only folks will be able to share in, of like, oh, maybe we're going to get a new perspective on how this decision went down, who was actually talking behind closed doors, as opposed to it being like an open fact of court life and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I think that our best practice should be like, any questions that you have that come up in the pilot, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, that means X, Y, and Z thing, because we already know that this thing happens because it's in the book and it's on the Wikipedia page. You know, like, we can still totally preserve a little bit of mystery and let the story unfold in the way that the show wants it to without ruining it for folks who don't know very much about this chapter of Targaryen history and are like... Again, a non-spoilery thing that I can say from having seen the first episode is, like, I think that people absolutely will draw emotional connections to these characters. And, like, that's really what the most interesting driving point of any show is, like, yes, there's all the big battles or showdowns, but, like, the things that are driving these characters, the emotions, the relationships, the secrets, all of that stuff are things that I think people are going to want to see unfold in real time and not have ruined for them. So keep it up, book readers of the internet. Keep up that same spirit from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and it seems like we know some of the major things that happened, but we don't know how. And there's a quote here, like, quote, yes, we know this person was named on air on this day, but why and what happened? And what was that private room conversation that led to that? Was that an impulse by the king, or did he have some secret conversation with his hand that led to it? Was he manipulated? Was he changed? Does his wife have a conversation with him? Those are the things that wouldn't be in the court record, aka the Fire and Blood, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't make the history book. But as the God's eye point of view in the storytelling, the objective truth, we get to show these moments. And I think that's the thing that will keep people leaning forward and interested, end quote. So on some level, he's just justifying kind of the existence of the show. Like, the show will have more detail and nuance than what you're able to read in the book, right? So that's kind of standard marketing. But it does kind of speak to the broader question, right? And I've really... I really kind of come around a little bit on this as time has gone on, is like, I used to hate flash forwards in TV shows. Like Jonah Robinson and I argued about like Breaking Bad having a flash forward, right? And I remember a listener wrote in, I apologize, I don't remember who it was, but somebody wrote in and basically said, like, the thing about flash forwards is, yes, they spoil things that might happen. They answer a bunch of questions like, does that person live until that point in time? But it replaces those questions with a bunch of other questions, like, how did they get to that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they in this situation? In season 5 or 6 of Breaking Bad, you flash forward and Walter White is, you know, he's all like grizzled and his face is all messed up and he has a gigantic gun in the backseat of his car. And it's like, how did he get there? Why does he have a gun? What is he playing? You know,
mm-hmm.
like, and I was annoyed at the flash forward, but it's like, I think I've come, I don't love flash forwards now. I'm not like, flash forwards are amazing, but I definitely am not as bothered by them, because I agree that anytime there's a flash forward, it's like, it introduces a bunch of new questions into the equation that are worth considering. And I think it's like, it's those in-between moments that the show is really going to take pride in answering, it sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that was, to me, one of the most compelling things about season 1 of Game of Thrones was that they didn't quite have the blank check budget to like do exactly mm-hmm. whatever they wanted. They were still sort of in testing ground. And the way that they filled out some episodes was just with what they call two-handers, like quiet two-hander scenes. So just two cameras, two people in a room having conversations. Those are some of my favorite scenes of season 1 of Game of Thrones. And Fire and Blood has the opportunity to basically like insert a lot of those behind closed door moments, those intimate moments between characters, to help explain the emotional motivation behind these bigger plot points that people might know from the books.
I think what's also interesting is this idea of what is canonical in the show, right? Like in this interview, it's clear that Fire and Blood is canon. You know, it is the canonical version of events, but that the show will depart from what is described in the book, in my guess is for some significant ways. And that the show will be depicting what quote unquote actually happened that is then twisted, perverted, changed, game of telephone into the book Fire and Blood, right?
Yeah. Yeah. After Condal said that line that you just quoted about like that this is sort of the God's eye point of view of the story, I followed up by saying, like, so you think that this, meaning like House of the Dragon, is going to be the more objective truth? And he was like, yes, correct. And then when I was like, so like the more canon version of how everything unfolded, and then he hedged a little bit and he was like, I hesitate to say canon because like George wrote the canon in Fire and Blood. But George, we know,
this is the canon is kind of what he says.
Because it's not just Ryan making this up. It's like George himself has been present in many meetings. Him and Ryan Condal have had multiple conversations. He's seen all the scripts. He's seen early cuts of the episode. Like George absolutely has put his like stamp of approval on the version of this story that we're about to see unfold in Fire and Blood or in House of the Dragon. And I think that that's important for folks to keep in mind going forward, because there could be revelations that are new to everyone, book readers and show only folks, which is cool. I kind of like that. It's like a balance. We're a little bit all on even footing here.
By the way, side question, do you know when you're allowed to talk about House of the Dragon episode 1? I mean, we won't be talking about it on this podcast until it airs. But when does the embargo lift for your ability to review the episode?
They haven't given us a review embargo yet, which is interesting. So stay tuned.
I have not seen any reviews of the episode hit the internet yet. So like,
No.
Won't be one. You know, maybe you have to wait until it airs.
Time will tell, David Chen. Yeah. Time will tell.
Because my question would be, what about episode 1? Like, how has that episode handled? You know, but you can't talk about it yet. So eventually we will discuss that, I'm sure. But when it comes to the implications for this podcast, we will continue to be pretty spoiler averse in general. So that's kind of the take home from this is like, despite the fact that things will change and things will be illuminated in a different way, I think we're going to try to keep on line of the spoilers as possible. But even if something is revealed, it's very likely it'll play out differently in the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
you have permission to mute my mic if if I accidentally start entering spoiler territory. I promise to be conscious of it, though.
We have two more weeks until this podcast kicks off with our first recap of House of the Dragon. We'll probably try to do one more episode before now and then, just kind of with any last minute thoughts on things. And there are a couple of other interview segments that we do want to discuss. But any other feelings, Kim, as we approach the home stretch into like your first official recap of the series?
I'm just feeling excited. It's been a good, I don't know. I'm really enjoying the ramp up to this season. I think that mm-hmm. like people already seem a little bit more engaged and more excited and optimistic than maybe I would have guessed like 3-4 months ago. So yeah, just overall excitement. And I can't wait to get into the more nitty gritty details of what happens, because that's my happy place down there in the muck
Indeed.
Of spoilers.
Well, I am really excited to chat with you about it when the season comes up, which is, again, starting on August 21st. And it should be really, really interesting. It's shaping up to be an exciting season, both for the show as well as for this podcast, A Cast of Kings. So keep it tuned in to castofkings.com, and also check out our videos at acastofkings.com/YouTube and acastofkings.com/TikTok. Should be some good stuff there in the meantime. Until then, she is Kim Renfro. I'm David Chen. Thanks for listening. We'll see you sometime next week.